Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sounds of the Desert, Los Nidos del Desierto. I am your host, Joaquin, and I am joined by a very special guest. Welcome to the show, Sean McFarland. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Joaquin. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. We are very, very honored to have you here. So you are a local photographer, correct?
That is correct.
And what kind of photography do you normally work with?
I have a wide variety of topics and interests. If I had to camp myself into any three categories, I would be somewhere between fine art photography, travel photography, and street photography.
That is wonderful. It's nice to have a different, you know, broad idea of what you like to go for. So local events? Do you take photos for like weddings and stuff like that?
I don't do any wedding photography, although I'd be open to doing engagement photos. The pressures of doing a wedding, I think, would probably overwhelm me. So kudos to all my colleagues out there who can shoot weddings. I admire that talent. If I'm out and I'm covering events, it's more for my own enjoyment and the thrill of being able to capture candid images. And so sometimes when I'm out, I'll be out at a street festival or doing something that I enjoy, and just people watching and just to see what they're up to. And I think the real joy of street photography is capturing the beauty of everyday life and people enjoying the simple things or capturing random moments, which can maybe sometimes make us think.
I think the best part about that is the natural aspect of it. You know, you see people in their rawest form, and you have nature itself at its rawest form. And I think that's such a beautiful way to display our world through photography, because obviously our eyes will always be able to see so much more than a camera can capture. But I think doing street photography is probably the closest we can ever get. And I think that's a beautiful way to go about it. So we talked a little bit before this interview about different ways of printing. And you mentioned you do a lot of film and darkroom work, which is something that I love photography. I love doing it, but I don't even have my toes dipped into that world. So I want to know a little bit more about your process with that.
With the film photography, so I'll give you a little bit of a historical background on how I got started in film. When I started my freshman year of college, way back in the dark ages, way before cell phones and horse and buggy was pretty popular at that time. But anyway, I got started in film. I took my first film photography class and just absolutely fell head over heels in love with that. And I took that at a small college called Waldorf College in a place called Forest City, Iowa. Not a college anymore, it's a university. So I was there when it was just a baby college and started out doing film and really fell head over heels in love with that. That was 1989, so that was a while ago. And out of that burst an opportunity, the public relations department of the college came over and said, well, do you have a student in your class that might be interested in picking up a work study and actually covering events? And that's where I probably picked up a little bit of excitement, and even though it wasn't street photography per se, I was covering events for the college and doing public relations work, which also gave me access to the darkroom. So darkroom skills actually became more like riding a bike. It became a very natural, normal, regulated process. And I had a Pentax K1000. I actually have it with me today if you want to take a look at it later. I was using that camera at that time and shot consistently with that all the way up until about 2006, 2004, actually, with the dawn of the better digital cameras coming up. And so digital made my film work go away for a while. And then it's only been about 3 years ago that I fell back into film work again. And a funny short story, but my sister knows that I love vintage cameras. I probably have over 40 in my collection.
Wow.
And my oldest camera goes back to 1909, and she shoots like a beauty. She does a really good job.
Wow.
And so I got this Raleigh cord, and I started doing my research. It was from 1954. It was a twin lens reflex. You probably heard of a Raleigh Flex. They were made by the same company out of Germany. I didn't even know how to open the camera. And that was pretty rare for me. So I got it open, got it up, got it running, thank goodness for YouTube University. And I realized 120, does people still make 120 film anymore? And sure as shooting, you can still buy 120 film. And I loaded it up and learned how to use an external light meter. And you'll only get 12 photos on a roll of 120 if you're shooting it in a twin lens reflex where that's a 6 centimeter by 6 centimeter. And then I started printing with that. Then I started falling really head over heel in love, not only with film again. Medium format creates a really beautiful crystal clear image. It's also an awful lot of fun to develop that in a darkroom. And I actually purchased about a year and a half ago a Bessler 23C that were made back in the early 1960s, and I assembled it, and I can actually do photography out of my own home and do the darkroom developing. And I wish I could explain the thrill of taking a film negative and loading it up in your enlarger and just start watching the magic happen in front of you. And what a thrill. And then you really start to, as I shared earlier with you, you start to really appreciate what the light is doing. And not only that, but the thrill of composing through a twin lens reflex, because everything is flipped around inside the camera. So when you're doing your composing, I always say, well, which hand am I holding up? And if you're waving your left hand, it's going to look like your right hand is coming up in the photo. So anyway, it's kind of the challenge to composing, but it's a real thrill. And I think one of the things I love most about film is the printing process.
Mm-hmm. That is a very, very unique process. You know, there's different forms of art, especially in the kind of photography range, like film and just a bunch of different ways to exhibit that art. But I think with the using darkroom and film specific kind of methods is very unique for photography, and something that, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's a beautiful thing. So you mentioned having a bunch of different vintage cameras. I think that is the coolest thing ever. How would you say that photography as a whole has changed from, you know, something from 1906 all the way until a camera from 2025?
Well, I will tell you that the new cameras do a lot of the work for you. Mm-hmm. And so the cameras, depending if you can actually dial in, depending on the make and model of a camera, and make all the decisions for your photo. You're setting the aperture, you're setting the shutter speed, you're doing all of your own manual focusing. A lot of the really good high-end, either, you know, DSLRs or even the mirrorless, you can go in and do all that work, or set it for an aperture priority, or set it for a shutter priority, depending on what the aesthetic or composition or situation you're trying to cover. And that's a lot of fun. Sometimes I don't always like the choices that the camera makes for me. When you are, like most of the cameras that I prefer to work with, they're at minimum 70 years old, and there's no light meter in them. And so I have to use an external light meter to figure out the lighting values and literally dial those in, select my aperture and shutter speed, and in some cases add a filter, in which case I have to compensate for the aperture. And all of that work is going on in my brain. And one of the reasons I still love to shoot film is because my brain is further engaged in all the decisions that have to go into that photo. So I feel like there's, in some ways, an even deeper sense of ownership in the image I produce. And it all has to, it's kind of like the stars. It all has to line up to get what you're going for. And so yes, when you see the evolution, and I feel like I've lived part of the evolution of film, because I've gone from a Pentax K1000 to now if I'm going to do some digital work, I'll use a Canon EOS RP. I'm also a big believer that you don't need to spend a lot of money on your camera gear to get the kind of photos you want.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I really think that if you're out there as a photographer and trying to find your niche, don't go spending a lot of money on these.
Don't break the bank.
Don't break the bank. You don't mm-hmm. have to. And in fact, if you take a look, I don't know if you've heard of KEH Camera, but they're a used camera superstore. And they rehab everything from manual film cameras to digital. And there's no reason why you can't. I still get beautiful images out of a Pentax KX digital. Fortunately, the autofocus doesn't work anymore, but I can manually focus it in. Mm-hmm. And that's a camera from 2009, and I got some of my most beautiful work. Still great, takes great photos today. And I think it's all about finding out, you know, where your niche is. What do you want to do? I really think the best camera out there is the one that works for you.
Wow, that is beautiful advice. That is really great advice, because there's so many people trying to figure out, oh, what camera do I get? What's the best camera for settings? You know, and there's a big argument nowadays with phone cameras nowadays, because you know you pick up an iPhone and you take a pretty picture, and you know the quality of an iPhone nowadays looks so clean that some people think you don't need a photography camera to pursue photography. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to admit that happened to me. You know, I've had an iPhone for years. I haven't made it past number 13. It's okay. But when these phones take spectacular photos. They're really wonderful. When I facilitated a street photography workshop, I made absolutely sure that no one coming into the class felt like they needed to have a specific camera to do the workshop, because the photos you can take on, whether it's a Samsung iPhone or whatever you're photographing with, you can take incredible, beautiful photos with these cameras. And in fact, all the composition, and you can dig deep into those menus and take extraordinary photos with them. So you should never rule out that you can't get an amazing photo just by using your phone. In fact, I've had some really good fortune with my own phone. So that's why I don't want somebody to feel like they're less than in any shape or form, because you can take an extraordinary photo with whatever equipment you have in front of you. They don't typically work for me in the way that I like to do photos. I do think that some of the, when you were trying to zoom in on something, you might lose some of the detail mm-hmm. in there. They're getting better at it. But nonetheless, I did take a weird, like, few years hiatus off of my handheld cameras, because I'm traveling. I'm like, oh, these photos look great. For me, it's all about how you want to recreate that image when it appears on a piece of paper, or, you know, in a frame, or however that might work for you. You can still enlarge and make really gorgeous, gorgeous photos right from your phone. And so that's why I say, if that's what's working for you from your creative aspect, don't rule it out. Run with it.
Yeah, definitely. I've also had the same experience where, you know, my Instagram is full of different photos that I've taken, and there's a good majority of them that were on my phone. And I don't think there's any reason to, you know, be ashamed of that at all, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's at the end of the day, you're using what's part of your own creative control. I think full photography cameras allow you to be more specific on that. Like you mentioned, older cameras, you get to work with the light meter and have it much more specific to what you have in your mind. And I think iPhone cameras specifically are a little more limited in that aspect. Like you said, trying to zoom in is never going to be as good as having a higher zoom lens for your camera. But at the same time, it's still something that you can totally make something beautiful out of and be happy
with. Oh, absolutely. And what I really want people to do more of is print those images from your phone. Make those little gallery albums after you've had a special event, or maybe you've had a chance to travel, and see what they look like when they come out on paper. My number one concern, and I speak from experience, is back in the day when I was trying to be cheap and trying to make the best of my SD cards, I would wipe them off. I would put all my images on a computer. I'm just going to let you know, computers come and go. Mm-hmm. Passwords get forgotten. And then what are we going to do with these digital images that kind of live out there in a cloud or on a disk? But what tends to last forever, as long as, you know, there isn't something tragic that happens to your belongings?
Right.
Those albums last forever. And you want to go back and pick them up. You want to see them on your coffee table. You want to see them on your shelf. you want to have some friends over, and instead of trying to put a password in and pull those images off of your computer, they're in a book or they're in a frame. So, and I know it gets a little expensive, but I have over 20,000 photos on my iPhone, and it's really fun to go back. But I'm like, what if I lose this password?
What if someone steals my phone tomorrow, yeah, and then I've lost it all? That's a tragic thing.
So if there are treasured images and images that you love, and you have that photo that you took, that's a, you know, beautiful memory of that stroll down the beach on that special night, and you got that sunset just the way you wanted in your memory, print that thing, get it on your wall, and treasure it. That's what I wish for more of these, because I do have a kind of weird fear that all the stuff that's living in the digital realm, is could it get wiped clean? Will we miss it someday? I guess that's one of the reasons why I kind of think film is making such a huge comeback, is people like that tangible stuff. People like to see it. I still have my grandmother's photo albums from the 1930s and 40s, and I love to go, and you know, she had those photos were printed down at Walgreens. Those were the days when you dropped your camera off. You probably didn't, and you didn't open your camera. You let that be done by the folks running the photo shop down at Walgreens, and you came back and you picked up your camera with a fresh roll of film and the prints before, and then what you did is you took your photo corners and you put them into a paper book. Well, these paper books are 85 years old now. They're sitting on my desk, and I still pull them open because actually I think my grandmother was probably one of my greatest inspirations, even though she would have never called herself a photographer, but she was the one who was really ultimately responsible for preserving the memories and some of the candid photos of my mother and my aunts and uncles when they were growing up as a kid. So it's kind of fun when you go back and you look at those.
Yeah, definitely. There's a nostalgic factor with that. And you just mentioned your grandmother and how she wouldn't consider herself a photographer. But with everything you told me that she's done and preserved those memories and all of those different lifestyles and put into that, personally, I would very much consider that the most pure form of photography. That's what photography is, you know, capturing these moments and letting them be as, you know, free and just as perfected as possible and for everybody to see.
Oh, it's incredible. And I have her two cameras. I have one that she probably bought around 1938 or 1939. It's a box camera, and it took 616 film, and I was able to retrofit it to take a 120. And my niece, who is also an artist, 2 years ago, we went to a historic Main Street in Wisconsin, and we dressed her up like it was the 1940s. And I probably took one of my most favorite and iconic photos of her using our grandmother's camera. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, it's straight out of the 1940s. We've got an old painted advertisement on a brick wall in the background. And the only thing that's kind of missing from the photo, because she's got pearls and a polka dot dress on, is maybe, and she got the hair perfectly coiffed. And the only thing missing is maybe a cigarette. She pulled a little bit of a sash. She was a great model for me when we were starting to do some vintage shoots with the old cameras, and we really came out with some great results. But yeah, there are what I would say unsung photography heroes out there who haven't had their work recognized. And one of my all-time favorite street photographers is Vivian Meyer. And I don't know if you're familiar with her work at all, but if you're not, you've got to. Never had a moment of recognition for her work in her entire life. And when I facilitated my street photography workshop, and I'll show you what one of my TLRs looks like. I brought one with today, but she shot with a similar camera. You know, you only get 12 rolls. You still have to do all your own light metering and dial in your aperture and shutter speed. That takes me forever. But Vivian Meyer's out on the street, and she had to be within 6 to 8 feet of people and taking some of the most iconic street photography of all times just because she was curious. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's my number one wish for anybody who even has an inkling that they love photography. Follow your curiosity and go for it, because I mean, if you take a look at the Vivian Meyer collections, she was an absolute genius.
That's wonderful. It's great to see that, you know, still kept alive. Definitely have to check that out. That is a wonderful thing. A lot of my photos that I've taken have been just following that curiosity you mentioned. It's just like there's some of my favorite ones that I've ever taken. I was just there and happened to have my camera and was like, that might look pretty nice. And then I like to think of photos a lot less than just, oh, it's a pretty photo. I like to think of, you know, what the symbolism is, what makes it stand out from others in a deep understanding kind of way. And so a lot of the photos I take are just like, oh, that means something deeper to me when I look at it. So I'm able to capture that. And I think that's something that people, I agree with you, I think people should really follow that and just, you know, go for it. There's nothing wrong with taking out your phone or taking out your $100 camera or your $30 camera and just taking a photo and see where it goes.
Oh, absolutely. And it's interesting because I photographed in many, many countries. And it's an interesting experience when you pull out a very noticeable camera. And, because if I'm pulling out my Canon EOS with a 24 to 240 millimeter zoom on it, it's kind of a noticeable camera. Even though it's not, you know, there are some lot bigger cameras out there.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. You can kind of tell somebody's holding a camera in their hand. It's so funny because I was in Scotland and I was photographing around this Christmas carnival. And one of the security members of the security team stopped me and said, oh, sir, you can't take photos here. And I said, and I reached into my pocket and I said, so does it mean that I can't take photos with this, pointing to my Canon? And I pulled out my iPhone. I said, or is it okay if I take photos with this? And he didn't know what to say. And the point of the matter is, you know, if you're out and photographing, and I don't know why on God's green earth taking photos at an outdoor Christmas carnival, which is in a public space, was somehow problematic for them. Mm-hmm. And you respect that. And I said, I completely respect, but I just wanted to know if there was a difference if I'm shooting with my iPhone or with the Canon EOS RP. Mm-hmm. But if you're out there and you're photographing and you're following your curiosity, I find sometimes maybe you don't always know why you're taking the photo, but you're feeling called to take it anyway. And then follow that instinct.
Mm-hmm. I get that instinct sometimes, and it leads me to take some really, really beautiful photos and just, you know, something that feels a lot deeper to me in a more spiritual and, you know, symbolic way. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into something that's a little more controversial. I want to get your opinion on this. So AI is something that is very prominent right now. People are making a lot of AI images. They claim it's art. You know, they come in and make a prompt and say, oh, it looks really pretty and it's a beautiful thing. But one thing that's really important, I think, is the distinction between AI making a pretty photo and someone putting their heart and soul into making it look pretty and something deeper. So what is your opinion on that?
So I guess I look at it from two perspectives. If you are going into, and I can't remember what one of those AI engines are where you put in all the words and, you know, it comes up with an image. I attended a seminar with a gentleman who creates images using AI completely. Mm-hmm. My question to him, and he makes incredible images using AI to the point where he's actually sold them to galleries.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. And I can't remember his name. This was about a year and a half ago, but I took the online seminar to learn about this. But I said to him as we were nearing, you know, having a Q&A session with him, I said, but you're not calling this photography, right? He says, no, I'm not. And I said, I'm glad, because there was no camera involved in the use of creating your image. And he says, you're absolutely correct. So if you are using AI specifically to create images, you can't call it photography. There was no light involved.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So photography in its essence is photo, which has its origins in the words for light. Graph means it's coming out on something. It has a platform,
mm-hmm.
and it's going onto a piece of paper. So That's one camp of AI, where you're using AI specifically to generate images. My very strong opinion on that is you cannot call that photography. You can call that art. You can call that a creative process. You can create that, but you had better call it what it is. Now, there's another area of artificial intelligence that starts creeping into our photography life. AI can be present in a lot of different editorial imaging. Say, for example, I use Lightroom for a lot of my digital work. I use Lightroom, I guess, for lack of a better, lightly. It's because I still want my work to be my work when it's coming out. What I'm using Lightroom for is I'm adjusting shadows. I'm adjusting textures. I'm working with the mood of the photo to bring out the story I'm trying to tell in the image. That's a different process. So it's interesting, Lightroom calls some of these editorial pieces artificial intelligence. Well, these are methods. Let's say, for example, I don't know if you've ever tried to get grain out of a digital photo.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go in there and you can create an entire new, I think it's called a DNG file. And you can go in there and you can ask Lightroom to adjust the grain to your specific. And it's using its technological brain to decipher. But I'm still making a decision in the editorial aspects of creating this photo. Like Ansel Adams said, you don't really take a photo, you make one. You are really ultimately making an image by the time it comes out to be enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, if I'm doing some digital work, I'm using these Lightroom tools. And it's interesting because one of the things I don't do in my work is I don't borrow a cow from another photo to put on my hill next to the cabin if the cow wasn't there in the first place. And if you're going to do that, I my hope is that maybe folks would be a little transparent about that. I think it's just because it's my own bias. I'll be really clear. It's kind of a bias for me. I'm not going to borrow, you know, a mountain from another image to put it next to the cabin and then import a stream from somewhere else, because I wasn't standing there in that moment. That wasn't the moment I experienced, and that's not the moment I want to share. Now, other photographers, they might like to do that. There's some really crazy, wonderful photographers out there who make these dreamscapes, and they're using a lot of really creative editorial tools. And there's no second guessing. They're borrowing from all of these great AI tools that exist out there. And that's a beautiful and creative process. There's one photographer, I can't think of her name, but her kids are in all of her images, and they're flying their toy planes in the air and, you know, catching sheep as they're flying over clouds. And well, we know none of that stuff is happening in our everyday life, and we have to use some creativity. I really applaud that, because she's using all these crazy, wild, amazing digital technological things for her creativity, and she's really putting together, to me, that's basically digital painting, in my opinion, and her creative process really shows. But she's unapologetically using these amazing editorial tools to create a beautiful image at the end that, quite frankly, I'd love to have on the wall, because it's just phantasmagorical, if I can just borrow that term from somebody out there.
Sure. That's wonderful. We want to thank you for coming in, Sean. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. Really appreciate it. Could you tell us where we could find your work, Instagram, anything like that?
Yes. I am at Sean McFarland, and that's spelled S-H-A-U-N, my last name, MCFARLAND.photography. And you can also, my website is SeanMcFarland.photography. And keep an eye on the activities at Yuma Arts Center. I do have a solo exhibition coming up. The opening night is March 15th. and speaking it makes it all the more real. And so come on down. The name of the exhibition is called Far From Home, and it's travel photography.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much once again for coming in. Really appreciate you being here. And good luck with your photography and travels.
Joaquin, it's been an honor and a joy. Thanks for having me here today.